welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, quiz shows. Later on, we'll hear the Quiz Kids from 1948. But right now, the program, It Pays to Be Ignorant. Almost the reverse of a quiz show, this was tops in the category of quiz programs at the time of the airing, heard on CBS Radio on March 28, 1947. Just a bit shy of 13 million people were tuned into this broadcast.
A dentist.
A man who runs a filling station.
Correct. Pay the man $8. What is a wife?
A woman who sews up that rip in your coat that you tore helping a blonde into a cab the night before.
Correct. Pay that man $9 because...
It pays to be ignorant. Presented by Johnny.
Well, here we are again with that quiz program that decided the school teachers they had better go back to work. Our experts consist of three missing cars and a train of thought. First, we have the celebrated author, Mr. Hammock Norton, who has just written a book entitled The Cow Jumped Over the Moon or Old Buttermilk Sky. But here he is, Mr. Harry McNaughton.
Thank you. I have a poem, Mr. Howell.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yes. Once I bought a handsome cow, then came the awful blow. I never got a drop of milk because I bought a cow named Joe.
That was a poem?
Bully, wasn't it?
Please. Mr. McNaughton, you're a jerk. Next we have a woman. Next we have a woman who is so bow-legged, she looks like a donut with one bite taken out. The only thing she has ever had whistle at her was a tea kettle. Here she is, direct from the basement of Collier's mansion.
You know, I was invited to a masquerade ball last week, but I couldn't go.
You couldn't go to the masquerade ball? Why couldn't you go?
Well, the women had to wear a costume to match their husband's hair.
Well?
My old man's bald head.
You
couldn't. Mr. McConnell, you would have been a sensation. A bald-headed woman.
Okay. Next, we have a man. Next, we have a man who has to wear cotton in his ears to keep the sawdust from falling out of his head. A man who was so bald the day he was born, the doctor didn't know which end to slap. George Shelton.
Say, remember that job I told you I got last week? Mm. Well, I'm not working there anymore.
I see.
No, so the boss said something to me that I didn't like, and I'm not going back until he takes back what he said.
Well, tell me, what did he say?
You're fired.
Yes. Mr. Shelton, it's about time you knew that nobody ever got any results laying down on the job.
No, how about a chicken?
A chicken?
Yeah, you you got him there.
Yeah, I was laying for him.
Will you please stop laying him around here? Now, let's get on here.
Well, that was quite a yoke.
All right. Those are the experts, folks, so you'll just have to make the best of it. Here's the first question. Let's try hard this evening and get an answer.
Yes, let's.
Here's the question. If an airplane mechanic works on an airplane, what does an automobile mechanic work on?
Mr. Howard, that's a mechanical question, is it?
Yes, it is.
I love mechanical questions. They're so mechanical.
They're so mechanical. Well, what about the answer?
I'm just dying to hear it.
Oh, I see. You died years ago, but you haven't got sense enough to lay down. Miss McCown, do you know anything about mechanics?
Do I? I was out with a student's mechanic the other evening, and what I didn't learn...
You learned something about mechanics?
Mm.
All right. How many bolts has a cylinder head?
I can't tell you that. You see, the night I was out with him, we just worked on the clutch.
On the clutch.
Yeah.
please try and answer the question. How many volts has a cylinder? Wait a minute.
Hey, wait. That wasn't the question.
All right. It wasn't the question. I just made a mistake.
It was your father who made the mistake.
All right. The question is, if an airplane mechanic works on an airplane, why does an automobile mechanic work on?
And every time I ride in my car, I get soaking wet.
You get soaking wet riding in your car?
Yeah, it's fluid drive.
It's a good car for a drip. Now, let's get on here. The question's about mechanics.
My old man is very mechanical.
Yeah.
He can fix anything. Last night, there was a leak in our gas stove, and he went to work on it with a blowtorch.
Yes?
By the way, where do you live now, Miss McConnell?
On the roof.
On the roof. That's fooling the OPA. No ceiling. Will you cut it out? Cut it out and try and answer the question. If an airplane mechanic works on an airplane, what does an automobile mechanic work on?
Time and a half.
Time and a half. Please, that's not right. Let's get on here.
Mr. Howard, my car broke down yesterday.
Yeah, did you take it to a mechanic?
No, I took it to a doctor.
You took your car to a doctor?
Yes, you see, there was something wrong with the knee action.
The knee action, I see.
So I took it over and sold.
Yeah, you better put a brake on that If anyone ever offers you a penny for your thoughts, take it. And give them back some change. If an airplane mechanic works on an airplane, what is an automobile mechanic off? Do you know anything about automobiles, Mr. Shelby?
No, I fly an airplane.
Tell me, do you fly a twin-motor plane, Mr. Shelby?
No, I fly a tri-motor plane. See, if one motor fails, I can fly another.
You know, I saw a charming girl walking along the road the other day, so I stopped my car and said, "Would you like a lift?" He said, "Yes, I'm going over to New Jersey. Will you run me over?"
And what'd you do?
The case comes up next week.
A good lawyer.
No, that's why I like airplanes.
You like airplanes better.
Yeah, they're such great things. You can leave New York tonight, one night, and the next morning before you put your pants on, you're in Alaska.
Oh, that's not for me. I wouldn't want to be in Alaska without pants.
Johnny, will you step in here and just find me 3 crack cylinder heads, 202 Philip Morris cigarettes, and give them to some lady or gentleman in the audience?
Thank you, Mr. Howard.
Thank you. Our first contestant this evening, Ken.
Very nice, gentlemen, Mr. Howard. I should like to present to you Mr. Boris Morris.
Oh, Mr. Boris Morris. Well, good evening, Mr. Morris, and thank you a lot for coming up to our microphone. How are you this evening?
Good evening, Tom Howard. Good evening, George Shelton. Good evening, Lula McConnell. And good evening, Harry McNaughton.
Well, that carries them all. Did you speak to Salter there?
Oh, yeah. How do you do, Harry Salter?
Well, we're very glad to have you, Mr. Morris, I'm sure. Where are you from? Would you care to tell us?
I just came from Hollywood, California.
Hollywood, California.
Hollywood, California?
That's right. That's
well, put a firecracker in my shoe and call me Hopalong Cassidy.
I see.
I used to work in that town.
Yeah,
I was a doctor in a delicatessen store.
You were a doctor in a delicatessen store?
I used to examine the tongue.
Uh-huh. Maybe I should go here a little bit. What are you doing in New York? On a visit? Would you mind telling us?
Well, Sammy, I came here to be present at the opening of my last motion picture called Carnegie Hall.
Oh, this is Mr. Morris that produced Carnegie Hall. Well, I didn't realize at first. Yes. That's great. I've read a lot about Carnegie Hall, Mr. Morris. When do you expect to open the picture?
I open at the end of April at the Winter Garden.
At the Winter Garden at the end of April.
Right.
Well, from what I've heard about the picture, it must be a great epic.
It looks like it may be one of the biggest musical pictures ever produced.
Is that so?
I think I'm going to have the New York Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by 5 symphony conductors, Leopold Stokowski, Walter Damrosch, Bruno Walter, Fritz Steiner, and Arthur Ozinski. It also has the 3 greatest instrumentalists in the world, Yasha Heifetz, Arthur Rubinstein, and Gregory Pitigorsky. Also, it has the 4 greatest singers, Lily Pons, Teresa Stevens, Jen Pierce, and Ezio Pinza. And also 2 popular performers, Harry James and Ron Monroe.
Oh, boy, it sounds... Mr. Morris. That sounds like the lineup of the Notre Dame football team, if you ask me. Well, that certainly is going to be a great picture with all those artists, I must say.
Well, how do you do, Mr. Morris? How do you do?
Greetings
to the land of sunshine and technicolor.
Oh, he loves that.
I made a picture last year out in Hollywood called Breakfast in Bed.
Breakfast in Bed. Did you have a big roll?
No, just a cup of coffee and a few crackers.
I see. Pay no attention to him, Mr. Morris. Tell me something. Are you married, Mr. Morris?
Yeah, I have one wife and one son.
One wife and one son.
Boy, you're in a rut.
Is your wife with you this evening?
The most beautiful lady in the audience.
Oh, in the audience. Right. My. Will she stand up and let us see the most beautiful lady in the audience, please? They're all standing. Well, it certainly is a pleasure, huh?
Do you always take your wife with you when you go out?
Always do.
He always takes his wife with you. That's no concern of yours.
You don't know what concerns me.
I... How long have you been married, Mr. Morris?
38 years, son.
38 years?
No, 28.
Oh, 28 years. And you still look good. That's fun. Well, that sounds like somewhat of a record, 28 years, especially when you live in Hollywood. We certainly are glad to have you with us.
Yeah, but you are. What's your first name, honey?
Boris.
Not Philip Morris. Boris Morris.
Boris.
Yeah, Boris.
Cute name, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, he's a cute kid, too.
All right.
Oh, boy, he's a cute Tootsie Roll.
Oh, he's
a cute Tootsie Roll.
Ah, stop it.
Well, you can just call me vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
I come clean.
Yeah. Yeah, but your bag is overstuffed, sir. Mr. Morris, you'll do us a favor at this point. If you'll reach into Johnny's cap and pick out a question for us, please.
Oh.
And will you read the question if you don't mind?
What holiday is mentioned in the song Easter Parade?
Good. What holiday is mentioned in the song Easter Parade?
Who wrote the song, Mr. Howard?
Please, the name of the man who wrote it is irrelevant.
Irrelevant? What's his first name?
Please.
Please irrelevant?
Ah, cut it out.
That's an odd name, isn't it?
Mr. McLeod, why don't you stand up and show the people how big an idiot you are?
You stand up first.
I said, will you please listen to the question again?
Why?
So you'll be able to answer it.
Well, who wants to answer it? You, Miss McCarter?
Well, what's the question?
What holiday is mentioned in the song Easter Parade?
Who wrote the song?
That's what I asked him before, but he wouldn't tell me.
Oh, he wouldn't. Why didn't you tell Mr. McNaughton who wrote the song?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Is it a secret?
Look.
You hollered at us because we can't answer your question.
Look.
But when we ask you a simple little question, you wouldn't answer us.
Look.
Is that justice? Is that cooperation? You dumb talker!
Mr. Sheldon, have you been stupid all your life?
Don't be silly. I haven't lived all my life yet.
What a pity that is.
Who wrote the song?
All right, Irving Berlin, if it will make you happy.
Irving Berlin can make me very happy.
All right. Can you answer the question?
What question?
Mr. Hart. Mr. Howard, didn't Irving Berlin write Alexander's Ragtime Band?
That is correct.
It is? Fine. Shall we go on to the next question?
Well, what do you know? Mr. McNaughton answered the question.
Did? Congratulations, Mr. McNaughton.
Oh, yes.
Sit down, please. Will you cut it out?
It was nothing, and nothing at all.
Nothing
carry on.
Carry on.
Let's get on here.
Please, Mr. Sheldon, you have in your possession the secret of complete imbecility.
Yeah, and I'm not letting it out to anyone.
All right. What holiday is mentioned in the song Easter Parade? Wait, I'll sing a few bars.
There goes our hooperating.
Wow. Mr. Sheldon, give me an arpeggio.
Yes, give him laryngitis.
Never mind. All right, Thomas. In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it.
Is that a popular song?
You'll be tremendous, ladies, in the sun parade.
It was before he started singing.
I will be in the clover.
It's easily part of the
song. When they look me over.
He should try singing with his mouth.
I'll be parade. Well, now that I stop singing, what holiday comes to your mind?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Great. Nice to you, Johnny. Come in here, Johnny, will you?
Yes, Mr. Howard.
And give our good friend, Mr. Morris, $24.60, or 67 cents, in case he wants to produce another picture. Also, 201 Philip Morris cigarettes.
That will be a pleasure.
And thank you, Mr. Morris. Now, Ken, how about getting our friend Harry Sauter on the job?
Fine, Tom, and he's here to play a song that sounds vaguely familiar. It's called Easter Parade.
Fine. Now we'll hear how it really sounds.
Lady with us now, and I should like to introduce to you Miss Virginia Mann.
Oh, fine. Good evening, Miss Mann, and thank you a lot for coming up. How are you this evening?
Quite well, thank you.
Well, thanks for coming, and I'm glad to hear that. Where are you from, would you care to tell us? That is your hometown.
New York City.
Oh, New York City, right at home. New York City. Yes.
Well, put a firecracker in my shoe. Oh,
wait a minute. How can you cut it out? You already said that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm repeating.
You're repeating.
Yeah, I always do that when I eat onions.
All right. Don't pay any attention to them, please. I'm sorry for the interruption, Miss Mann. What is your work or your profession?
Well, I'm in the theatrical profession.
Oh, yes? What branch of the profession?
In the dramatic and vaudeville, I was.
Oh, is that so? Well, that's very, very interesting. Yes, sir. I remember way back in those days, vaudeville was a great thing. Yes.
How do you do, Miss Mann? How do you do? Greetings. I remember the night I opened in my first play. When the curtain fell, the audience stood up in the aisle.
Yeah? Did they call you back?
They dared me to come back.
I had some swell lines when I was in the theater.
You had some swell lines. Now you got them in your face. Pay no attention. Are you appearing in any shows at the present time?
No, not just now.
Well, things have sure changed, Miss Mann, in show business since the days of vaudeville and those good old stock companies. I suppose you remember them.
Indeed, I do.
Every city in the country had one or two dramatic stock companies, and every member was a favorite.
That's right, Mr. Howard. Quite many of those stars came out of those companies.
That's right. And boy, that's where they got their schooling. I remember such shows days back as Birth of the Soul Machine Girl, Way Down East, Nellie the Beautiful Cloak Model, The Old Homestead.
Oh, Mr. Howard, I was in The Old Homestead.
You were.
You were? Oh, really? What were you in The Old Homestead?
The bay window.
And don't forget the burlesque shows of long ago, Mr. Howard.
I don't forget them, Mr. Sheldon. How can you forget Bobby Clark, Billy Gilbert, Pat White, Walter Houston, Molly Williams, Burt Lahr?
Tom Howard.
Yes, I also started there. I certainly would like to live those days all over again.
Why, didn't you cause enough suffering?
Please. Well, Miss Mann, it sure has been a pleasure talking to you. I've enjoyed it. It has sure brought back pleasant memories. Now, will you reach into Johnny's cap and pick out a question for us, please? And would you be good enough to read the question, if you don't mind?
What relation to each other were the Wright brothers?
Thank you. What relation? It's going to be tough. What relation to each other were the Wright brothers?
Well, Mr. Howard, that's a splendid question.
Yes, I'm glad you think so. Do you know the answer to it?
I'm sure that's splendid, too.
I see. Mr. Norton, when was it discovered you were an imbecile?
It just sort of leaked out gradually.
Uh-huh. The question is, what relation to each other were the Wright brothers? Mr. Sheldon, are you the oldest in your family?
No, my grandfather is.
I'm talking about your immediate family. Have you any brothers or sisters?
Well, there's Millie. She's my oldest sister.
Uh-huh. Who comes after her?
Nobody, but my old man says the first one that does can have her.
I see.
I came from a very, very nice family.
You did.
Which side of the house do you resemble?
What?
To which side of the house do you resemble?
The back porch. Let's get on here.
I came from a very remarkable family. I tracked them back to Columbus.
You tracked them back to Columbus?
Yeah, but when I got there, they'd moved to Akron. Oh.
Say, Mrs. Sheldon, did you ever look up your family tree?
Sure.
What happened?
He got hit in the head with a Colt nut.
Oh, yeah. Well, I came from a great family. Now, you take my great-great-grandfather.
Yeah.
Oh, there was quite a tail attached to him.
May I remind you, Mr. Sheldon, you're not kidding. Now, let's get back to the question, what relation to each other were the Wright brothers?
You know, my family, Mr. Howe, were all very highly regarded in England. Years ago, the king tapped my great-grandfather on the head with his sword and made him a duke.
Mm-hmm. So what? A policeman tapped my great-grandfather on the head with his club and made him an angel.
Nice. Look, we're not interested in family trees.
You know, my family didn't have a tree. It was more of a plant.
A plant?
Yeah. All my people were potted.
I have a very eccentric grandfather, you know.
You have a very eccentric grandfather.
Yeah, he's 80 years old. And we can't stop him from sliding down our banisters. So we wrapped barbed wire around it.
Did that stop him?
No, but it slowed him up a bit.
I don't believe any of you ever had any relatives.
Who did? Why, I had three fathers by my first mother and two mothers by my second father.
How in the world could that happen?
We lived in Hollywood.
Well, I only had one mother, but she was a very remarkable woman. She had something no other woman had.
And your old man married it. Let's get on.
That reminds me, you know, I'm terribly anxious to get home to my wife tonight. I had to have her to the doctor this morning. She couldn't breathe.
Goodness, what was the trouble?
Her girdle was too tight. I hope she snapped out of it.
Yeah, I saw the line.
My grandmother is sick, too. She broke her arm.
Broke her arm? How did that happen?
It slipped off the $2 winner at Hialeah.
Before I break these secrets with Ted, will you step in here and give our charming guest $25.33 for helping us out? Also, 204 Philip Morris cigarettes.
Certainly, Mr. Howard.
Thank you. Don't go away. I'll return in just a minute. Meanwhile, here's our England baritone, who was thrown out of the first grade of the Fairmount School in Hackensack, New Jersey, to tell you what we mean when we say...
It's late to be ignorant, to be dumb, to be dead, to be ignorant. It's
It Pays to Be Ignorant, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS broadcast from March 28, 1947. It's an hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now it's on to the Quiz Kids with Joe Kelly as host. This episode first aired on October 3rd, 1948 on NBC.
Listen to it fizz. Alka-Seltzer for headache.
Alka-Seltzer for acid indigestion.
Alka-Seltzer for cold discomfort.
Alka-Seltzer presents the Quiz Kids.
And children, here's today's first question. Listen carefully. The name of what fish, spelled backwards, is the name of a famous general?
Yes, there's the number one puzzler on today's list of brain teasers. See what you folks at home can do with it while the youngsters here in our classroom of the air get ready for roll call. And here they are, the quiz kids and the chief quizzer himself, old Grandpa Kelly.
Yes?
The Kellys have just experienced the thrill of welcoming their first grandchild. Congratulations, Joe.
Mm-hmm. all of you folks from all of the Kellys. Sure, just mighty proud we are of the little spalpeen. Yes, it's a boy, Joseph the Third. He wanted to come to school with me this afternoon, but his mother decided against it. Well, now, quiz kids, it's time to get busy on these questions. Let's see, present in class this afternoon, we have Patrick.
I'm Patrick Oncommon. I'm 11 years old and 7B at the Fort Dearborn School.
David?
I'm David Posca. I'm 11 years old and 1B at the Farragut High School, Chicago.
Joel?
I'm Joel Kupperman. I'm 12 years old and 8th grade in Falls School.
Lonnie?
I'm Lonnie Lundy. I'm 12 years old and in 8th grade at Lincoln School in Park Ridge, Illinois.
Sorry to report that little Melvin Miles is homesick this afternoon. Nothing serious, however, and we hope he will be back to take his regular place in class next week. Pinch hitting for Melvin is another one of our fine youngsters in the junior department, Pat's little sister, Sheila.
I'm Sheila Claire Cannon. I'm 8 years old and 3rd grade at the Fort Dearborn School.
All right, fine, kids. Now, can you answer your first question from Arthur Kaler of Brooklyn, New York? The name of what fish, spelled backwards, is the name of a famous general? We have two hands up, and Patrick's hand was first.
Well, I think that would be Eel, E-E-L, because that's Lee, General Lee.
That's
the
right.
Of the Confederate
Absolutely
the
right,
War.
Patrick. General Robert E. Lee, and I can mark you 100% correct on that one. And for sending in that question, Alka-Seltzer sends Arthur Kaler of Brooklyn, New York, a fine Zenith transoceanic shortwave portable radio, the most outstanding portable on the market today. Now, that's always Alka-Seltzer's reward when the quiz kids answer your question correctly. If they miss, Alka-Seltzer sends you a big Zenith radio phonograph combination with the new Cobra tone arm, two FM bands, the whole works. And this set is a real beauty, so try your hand at stumping these youngsters. Send your questions to Quiz Kids, Chicago. Now, here is an opera question from Helen Parsons of Dallas, Texas. I will read you a line from an opera, and you are to give me the same line in the language in which the opera was originally written. Here's the first one. Like a wild bird so freely winging. Patrick.
Well, that was in Italian. And that was in the opera Carmen.
Yes.
And that goes, Va sol fatur de coye sopran, la ti del let the sun vol lot.
Well, now,
singing
that,
wasn't so well.
Is that Italian?
Is that
Italian, Patrick?
It's French.
It's French. That's what it is. Yes, huh? I thought I recognized it. What were you going to say, Lonnie?
Well, I was
going
to say that it was French.
Uh-huh. All fine. Well, we just have to keep on everybody's tail around here. Now, try this one here. Carved upon my inmost heart. Sheila, did you have anything on it? Lonnie?
Well, that's from Rigoletto, and
yes?
That's in Italian, but I couldn't say it.
Well, let's see. We have another hand up. Patrick?
Well, that's... Carano me cal mio cor fast a primo palpitar la lisa bella mor mi de sempre ramentar.
Oh, fine, fine, Patrick, fine. Now, here's a question, a music question, from Sylvia Newland of Hutchinson, Kansas. Our organist, Howard Peterson, will play part of a popular song whose title suggests a nice present for someone. Now, you children are to identify the song and give the title of another song which suggests who might like the gift. Now, here's the first. All right, kids, now what is the name of that selection? Well, let's have it once more, Howard. All right, Lonnie?
That's my shawl. And almost any girl would like that, so that'd be, you can take almost any one with a girl's name in it, like
well, give us a time.
Margie. Or
Margie, uh-huh.
Sweet Lorraine or Eileen or
fine,
Dinah
fine.
Or any of them.
All right, that's just dandy. Now, how about this next one, Howard? Patrick?
Well, that would be Margie or Peggy O'Neill or Rosie O'Grady or my darling Clementine.
Well, what's the name of it?
That is Golden Earring.
Golden Earring. Uh-huh, that's right. Now, Robert H. Holmes of Battle Creek, Michigan, reminds us that there are many something of the month clubs going on these days. There's the Book of the Month Club, the Candy of the Month Club, Fruit of the Month Club, and now there's a Gadget of the Month Club. And this idea appeals to Mr. Holmes, and he wants you quiz kids to suggest some gadget ideas that might be useful to the Gadget of the Month Club. All right, David, you start it off.
Well, should I describe the...
Oh, yes, tell us about
it. Well, it's an onion cutter. You put the onions on sort of a spindle in the top, yeah. And they rotate, and knives peel off the coat. And then the onions are brought down to a adjustable cutter where you can cut them to any different shapes or sizes, dicing them or minced or cutting them into sheets.
Well, that's almost the breathtaking invention, David. Is that something that you just thought up? Have you seen one of those? Or?
No, I thought it up myself to keep the housewife from weeping over the onions.
Oh, yeah. All right. And Lonnie?
Well, I've had a little trouble when I'm composing. I find that when I play some new music that I'm composing, it's kind of hard to get it down on paper, so I'd like to invent a sort of attachment to the piano, so when you hit a note, it'd automatically type it on this attachment, and so once you play the music, you've got it written down.
Well, that's sort of a piano typewriter combination. Yeah. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And Sheila?
I have trouble getting my bicycle up out of the basement, and if there's a long arm to reach down the basement, then I lock my bike and carry the bike up with me on it and put it on the sidewalk.
I'll say there is something. Yes, sir. Now, that sounds very good. And, Joel, how about you?
Well, I'd like a gadget to do my homework, but I guess that isn't possible. So I shine my family's shoes every Sunday morning, so I'd like an automatic shoe shiner with the whole works.
Oh, yeah. Fine. Uh-huh. And Patrick?
Well, I'd like to have a robot that I could set it at night, and that in the morning it would pick me up, brush my teeth, wash my face and hands, set me down at the breakfast table... get my books in order and not wake me up until I was sitting at the breakfast table. And then eat.
Well, that would be quite a gadget, Patrick. Yes, sir. Well, let's see what's coming up next. So here's a question from Herbert Wilder of Portland, Oregon. In the 50 years since the Curies discovered radium, how much of the element has been isolated? Would you say the total amount of isolated radium in the world today is 6 pounds, 600 pounds, 6 tons, or 6,000 tons? What would you say? David?
Well, I'd say 6 pounds.
6 pounds is absolutely right, huh? Say, tell me something, David. Why has there been so little isolated?
Well, because there's so little of it in so much of the ore it's found, which is pitch blend, and it's so hard to extract.
That's right. Now, there's still radium in the world that exists in its natural state, like you say, in pitch blend, but it takes tons of pitch blend to get just a few grams of radium. Mrs. Dunlar Rose of Evansville, Indiana, points out that no matter how hard one tries not to become angry, people do now and then. But she says she knows of some people in children's stories that became very, very angry, and you kids are to tell why. All right? What made Rumpelstiltskin angry when he visited the princess the last time? Oh, now, I didn't see first hand go up there. Whose hand was up first? Lonnie?
Well, Rumpelstiltskin was made to... did you say when he saw the prince for the last time?
When he visited the princess...
Well, that's because Rumpelstiltskin had to... in order to save her baby from going to Rumpelstiltskin, she had to guess the dwarf's name, and she guessed it right, and that made Rumpelstiltskin angry because he couldn't have the princess.
That's right, yes. He was mad at an old white hen, wasn't he? Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, why was the wolf angry when he found out what was inside the churn? Sheila?
because when he could have caught the pig when he knew it was in there, and he got scared and he wanted to catch the pig all the time, and then the pig got him away from him that time.
That's right. The pig had rolled home from the fair in the churn. And the wolf, he didn't like that. Now, what made Dorothy angry when she threw water on the Wicked Witch? Pat?
Well, what made her angry was that the witch had already taken one of her magic shoes.
Yeah.
And she was going to take the other magic shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And Dorothy liked her magic shoes, and she got so mad that she took a pan of water and threw it on the witch.
That's right. What happened to the witch?
Well, she turned into a lump of dust.
That's right. Uh-huh. Yeah, she just melted right away. Now, I'm going to ask Howard Peterson, our organist, to help us again with this music question from Maxine Lewis of Colorado Springs, Colorado. This time, Howard will play songs that suggest a kind of fish, and you children are to tell if the kind suggested would be good to eat. Now, here's number one. Lonnie?
But stardust and starfish are not especially good to eat.
That's right. They are not edible. No, sir. All right, Howard, let's fish again. Patrick.
That's the sun in the morning and the moon at night.
No. Oh, yes, you're right.
That'd be a sunfish. And I don't think sunfish are good to eat either.
What? Did you say sunfish are not good to eat?
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yes, I should say so. Lonnie?
Sunfish are good to eat, but they're so small that it's not much use eating them, I think.
Well, Joel?
Sunfish are some of the largest fish. So there's lots of them, and they taste good.
I was thinking of something else.
Well, I think maybe you were, Lonnie.
They're not like most fish that are sort of like strings. They're sort of like shaped like big balls. And
well,
they're real big.
The sunfish that I am thinking about is a sort of a pen fish. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why. Mm-hmm. Well, now let's see about this next one. Lonnie?
That's hair of gold, eyes of blue.
All right,
well,
so?
That could be one of two things, a goldfish or a bluegill. A bluegill is good to eat, and goldfish is not.
No, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Right, in both cases, uh-huh. I guess some time ago, years ago, some of the college kids thought that the goldfish were good to eat. Now, here's a fantastic question if I ever heard one, kids. It's from Beulah Bowman from North Hollywood, California. You quiz kids are to follow the description I'm going to read and then end up with the full name of a movie star. Now, you must try and get 2 out of 3 on this one. Listen carefully. A great queen minus the great, plus a jitterbug, minus the feline, plus a result of a fire. What movie star? The full name of a movie star, Pat.
That'll be Katherine Hepburn.
Katherine Hepburn, that is absolutely right. Uh-huh. Now see if you can get this next one. The opposite of out, plus a football field, minus a kind of metal, and a solid body in the north, minus frozen water, plus the male of the species. Pat?
That'd be Ingrid Bergman.
Ingrid Bergman is right. Uh-huh. Now, see if you can get this third one. A tonsorialist, plus A, and an upright position, minus D, plus part of an old-fashioned lamp. What movie star? Lonnie?
Could you repeat the question?
Sure. A tonsorialist plus A and an upright position minus D plus part of an old-fashioned lamp. A movie star. The full name of a movie star. Lonnie?
Barbara Stanwyck.
Barbara Stanwyck is right. By the way, here's some baseball information. We know that you're all waiting to hear. The American League pennant race has just ended in a tie between the Cleveland Indians and the Boston Red Sox. That means a playoff will be necessary to select the team to meet the Boston Braves in the World Series. The Red Sox moved up into a tie with the Indians by beating New York 10-5, while Cleveland was losing to Detroit 7-1. Uh-oh, say, Here's a question that will give you quiz kids a chance to get even with your old chief quizzer, Kelly. You remember last week I asked the question, to what college might a father send his son if the name of the college suggested the father's business, such as a locksmith might send his son to Yale? You remember that? Well, anyway, I threw in a third part of my own. What college would be would the son of a highway builder attend? And the answer was Tulane. Yeah, I thought that was kind of cute. Now, Lewis Martin, who didn't think it was very cute, of New Orleans, wants you children to make up similar parts of the question and try them on me. I have four hands up. David?
The son of a nobleman.
Let's see, the son of a nobleman. Would it be Oxford?
No, it would be Duke.
Oh, okay. Oh, you really got me on that one, did you, huh? And Lonnie?
Well, I'd like two answers on this one.
Oh, dear, I can't even give one. All right, go ahead.
The son of a member of the royal family.
The son of a member of the royal family. Could I use Duke?
No.
I can't, huh? All right.
Well, all right, you can use Duke, but then I'd like three answers.
Oh, no. I refuse to use Duke. No, sir. You're going to have to tell me that one, Lonnie.
Be either Princeton or King's Point.
Well, how do you like that? I know both of them well, too. Joel?
Well, the conductor of a Los Angeles sightseeing tour.
Sightseeing tour.
Yeah.
UCLA?
That's right. UCLA?
How do you like that? I got one. Oh. Open up the door so I can throw my chest out. What do you know about that? Patrick?
Well, a writer.
A writer?
A writer.
A writer?
Yes.
Any kind of a writer?
Any kind of a writer.
A writer. Pennsylvania?
That's right.
Oh,
yes.
No.
And, the son of a peach grower.
The son of a peach grower. Let's see. I give up on that one.
A pit.
Peach pit. I get it. All right, those are all good. Well, that was a lot of fun. Certainly was. Now, here we go with more questions. Mrs. Mary Dayton of Oakland, California, has worked out a clever question that combines history, science, and poetry. The atomic numbers of the following elements should remind you children of lines of poetry, and a little knowledge of history will come in handy. The first line of what poem is suggested by the atomic numbers of silicon and uranium? Patrick?
Well, the atomic number of uranium is 92.
92 is right.
And silicon is number 14.
14, so...
1492, and that would be Columbus.
Yes, and...
And,
All right,
a poem about Columbus.
The poem, Lonnie.
Oh, there's one by Joaquin Miller. Behind him lay the gray Azores, behind the gates of Hercules, before him... Oh, I don't know, but that's the first line.
Well, the poem that Mrs. Dayton had in mind mentions the dates.
In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean.
That's the one. That's the idea. Uh-huh. Now, in the first stanza of this poem, the atomic number of argon suggests a day of the month, and the atomic number of rhenium suggests the year. So, Patrick?
Well, argon is number 18.
Right.
And, what was the other one?
Rhenium.
Rhenium?
Uh-huh.
Is number 73, I think.
Oh?
Wait, it's 75.
75 is right.
So that'll be 18.
18.
75.
75. And the poem?
The 18th day of the 75th. Oh, the 18th of April, so that'll be Paul Revere's Ride.
Well, how's it going now?
Well, listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. It was the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive that remembers that famous day and year.
That's very, very good, Patrick. Very good. Well, let's try this question from Minnie Mae Harper of San Diego, California. Can you rearrange the letters in the following words so they spell out the name of a game? This ought to be a lot of fun, too. Try to get two out of three parts. Oh, no, dimes. What game? Rearrange the letters. Oh, no, dimes. No coaching from the audience, please. It's an old game. Lonnie?
Dominoes.
Dominoes, that's it, uh-huh. And see about the next one here. On my polo. What game? Joel?
Football?
No, no. Patrick?
That would be Monopoly.
Monopoly, that's right, huh? And the third part, mild ado. Mild ado. What game? Mild A-D-O. Mild ado. What game? Of course, you've given me 2 out of 3. I'd like to see you kids get the third one, but... Do you give up? You sure? Old maid.
Yeah.
All right. Mrs. Dora Barnes-Turner, who lives in Birmingham, Alabama, says that last summer she chose one of the following places to spend her vacation. The Black Hills, the Green Mountains, the Redwoods, and the Bluegrass Country. She finally went to a place that was nearest her home. Where did she go? Joe?
Could you repeat the question?
Well, I'm afraid I'm after... Well, maybe not. All right. She chose one of the following places to spend her vacation, and she lives in Birmingham, Alabama. The Black Hills, the Green Mountains, the Redwoods, and the Bluegrass Country. So she finally went to the place that was nearest her home. Where did she go? Joe?
The Bluegrass Country, because that's Kentucky.
And Kentucky is nearer to
Alabama
than the other spot. That's right, huh? Ray B. Merriam of Olean, New York, thinks that popular novels by the following authors suggest baseball teams. So suppose these men were baseball managers, what teams would they select? James Fenimore Cooper. Lonnie.
Well, the spy, that could be the coach who looks at the other teams, tries to steal the signals from other teams.
Yeah, that's all right, uh-huh. And, Joel?
Well, all his books were about Indians, so he'd coach the Indians. Or maybe even the Boston Braves.
Yeah, the Boston Braves, sure, uh-huh. And how about Robert Louis Stevenson? Patrick?
That would be Treasure Island, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Pittsburgh Pirates,
right.
Pirates
are in there.
Uh-huh. And Mark Twain. Mark Twain. Lonnie.
Well, he would be the manager of the Phillies, Eddie Sawyer, and the Mark Twain wrote a book, Tom Sawyer, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, so you could make him the manager of the Phillies in place of Eddie Sawyer.
Yes, that's true, and of course, Joe?
Well, he wrote a Connecticut, a Yankee in King Arthur's Court, so he'd manage the Yankees.
The New York Yankees, uh-huh. And Lonnie?
He also wrote Life on the Mississippi, and the only city on the Mississippi is St. Louis, so he could manage either the Browns or the Cardinals.
That's right, uh-huh. Now, here's a discussion question from Margaret Russell of St. Louis, Missouri, and she would like to know what subjects you might like to have taught in school that you do not have now. Pat?
Well, they might have an executive course for people who would like to go into the political business, politics.
All right, fine. And Joel?
They should have a sort of debate course for people who'd like to be politicians, as Pat said, or lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Sheila?
Poems in school down the second floor and first floor.
Uh-huh. Well, now, those were all very good. Well, anyway, children, we'll fire this next question right at the judges. Who won today's Battle of Brains? We'll give the judges a minute with paper and pencil. And while we're waiting, here's an important message about one-a-day brand vitamin.
Don't take chances. Are you sure you are getting all the essential vitamins you need from the food you eat? Remember this. Government surveys show that the meals of 3 out of 4 persons are short on vitamins. Don't take chances. Instead, take one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Lack of vitamins in your food can cause you to feel under par and run down. So take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin. 60 capsules, 2 months supply, only $2 at any drugstore. Potency guaranteed by Miles Laboratories. Lack of vitamins in your food can keep you from feeling your best and looking your best. You can't afford to take chances. Take one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules.
Well, here's the verdict you've been waiting to hear, quiz kids. Remember, though, whether you win or lose, Alka-Seltzer will give each of you a $100 security bond to help you with your future education. Now then, according to our present system of scoring, which takes into consideration your age as well as the number of correct answers you give, the judges say that as a class, you didn't miss any questions at all. Pat was first, Lonnie second, and Joel third. So we'll see you three back at your desks next week, and you'll be here to compete with Melvin Miles, age 5, and Rennie Templeton, age 13. We hope all you folks listening will plan to be with us, too, next week. And now, until next Sunday, this is Joe Kelly dismissing the quiz kids. Goodbye, kids.
Bye, Mr. Kelly.
Listen to the Quiz Kids every week and listen to Alka-Seltzer's News of the World every Monday through Friday on most of these NBC stations. This is Bob Murphy speaking. Is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Quiz Kids on Tuned to Yesterday from October 3rd, 1948 on NBC. Though heard little in that last broadcast, the organ player was Howard Peterson, who was a staff organist for WGN in Chicago through the renewal of radio programs throughout the 1950s, coupled with pre-recorded shows being able to be played back on air. WGN actually had the distinction of being one of the last major stations with a pipe organ in its employ. That wraps up this hour of quiz programs on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.